WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. says it's working to carve out a new ceasefire and hostage release proposal. The State Department says that will require flexibility from all sides. National Security Communications spokesperson John Kirby says it will also include massive and immediate relief for Palestinians in Gaza.
The president himself is personally involved in working with our team and in working with leaders around the world to secure this deal. And that's what we're focused on. And the killing over the weekend just underscores the sense of urgency that we have to have in order to get it to closure.
In Tel Aviv, Israelis back in the streets demanding their prime minister finalize a deal. A federal judge has ruled the Trump campaign can no longer use the song Hold On, I'm Coming, co-written by Isaac Hayes. That, according to Trump's attorneys, Hayes' son says the song was not licensed for the Trump campaign's use. An unrelenting heat in the Southwest. Phoenix recording 100 days of 100 degrees or more so far this year.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The campus community at UW-Whitewater is mourning Kara Welsh, a business major and champion gymnast who was shot to death Friday. Today is the first day of classes for the fall semester at Whitewater. Flags on campus are at half staff. Police have arrested a 23-year-old suspect. Investigators say Welsh and the suspect knew each other. Democratic vice presidential running mate Tim Walz warning a Labor Day crowd of supporters in Milwaukee that Donald Trump would take away protections for workers.
Shouldn't be asking so much. Spend a little time with your child after they're born, or if you've got chemotherapy treatments, to be able to not lose your house because you're getting health care. That's not that difficult.
Walz says Kamala Harris is part of the most pro-union administration in American history. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A public information meeting regarding the findings of the Richland County Campus and Governmental Buildings Feasibility Study conducted by Venture Architects will be held Wednesday night. Richland County Board of Supervisors Chair Dave Turk says the board wants to be as open and transparent as possible.
We made the decision that we want to have that be an open public meeting and invite as many people as want to come. So we got a venue at the White House Banquet Hall that'll hold more people so we can all hear the news at the same time. And we try to do that with other things, too, where we do the stuff out in the open. We communicate the information to the best of our ability so people really do know what's going on.
Beginning at 6 Wednesday night at the White House Ramada Inn Banquet Room, Venture Architects will relay its findings to everyone in the community at the same time. All interested parties are invited to attend the meeting. A virtual option will also be available for those needing it through the Richland County Government website. And that's what you need to know. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Milwaukee's leading the pack. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports. The Brewers have a 10-game lead in the division after Labor Day thanks to a 9-3 win over the Cardinals yesterday. Jackson Churio hit a grand slam to help Milwaukee get the victory.
And the 1-1 pitch to Churio, swinging a ball, drilled deep left field. Back is Scott at the wall. Grand slam! Second career slam for the rookie Jackson Churio. And the Brewers have broken it open.
That call courtesy of ESPN Radio. The Brewers and Cardinals play Game 2 of their series tonight. The NFL season kicks off on Thursday with the Chiefs and Ravens. On Friday, the Green Bay Packers will play the Philadelphia Eagles in Brazil. It's the first time that an NFL game will be played in that country. Kickoff between the Packers and Eagles will be after 7 p.m. Friday night. And this week is the start of conference season in high school football. You can find one of nearly a dozen games right here on Civic Media Thursday and Friday. And with sports, I'm Jimmy Cusca.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Tons of sunshine today with warm temperatures climbing to the upper 70s. Tonight, as we stay clear, we fall crisp to lows near 50. And for tomorrow, sunshine holds tight as highs flirt with 80 degrees, all ahead of showers and maybe a storm Thursday and Friday. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
The Todd Almost Show.
Happy Labor Day to you. So there are companies out there who do value the worker, but there are a lot who still don't. And that's why I think it's so important to stop today and remember those who fought so hard and what this day is about. Yes, go out, have a beer, have a brat, enjoy it. But take a minute to pause, reflect, and say thanks to all those people who sacrificed for working people.
The Todd Almost Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. We're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us on a Hump Day edition next time. Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trigvy Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, plus your phone calls. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy. Lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe. But she knows she can fly away.
Wisconsin. I'm gonna light on fire because we're talking about money, money, money. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 o'clock, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, money, money. My special guest this half hour is Saru Jayaraman. She is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage, a national organization, campaign, and coalition fighting for a full fair minimum wage for every person who works in America. It's only fitting, Saru, that you would join me next. I just got off with a chef who's a friend of the show. And our focus today, Saru, is tips. We've reached a tipping point on tips, it seems, have we not? Oh, you're muted. That old fun thing.
We have, yes, we have reached a tipping point. Absolutely.
So the New York Times recently ran a headline that said tipping is everywhere. We've got former President Trump, Vice President Harris talking about taxes on tips. Let's just start sort of from the beginning. When I've traveled to Europe, tipping isn't a thing. It doesn't even really exist in a lot of places. How did we get where we are, where, frankly, everything now people are being asked to tip? Tipping is built into basically almost every restaurant worker's salary. We have a decreased minimum wage because of the presumption of tips. How did we get here?
It's a really great question and a sad story. So, look, before emancipation in the U.S., tipping was not prevalent. Actually, Americans hated tipping. They said, this is a European thing. We're Americans. We're a democracy. And you should get good service regardless of what you can afford to tip. And by the way, we think employers should pay their workers, not customers. And waiters in the U.S. at that time, prior to 1853, were mostly white guys. They only got wages, no tips. And in 1853, they went on strike for higher wages, and the restaurant industry instantly started looking for cheaper labor. After emancipation, basically a decade later, 1865, the restaurant industry started hiring newly freed Black people, Black women in particular, and telling them, we're not going to pay you. You're going to get this new thing that's just come from Europe called a tip. And that was the first time in world history that tips were mutated from being an extra or bonus on top of a wage, as they had been for generations in Europe. to becoming a replacement for wages as they became in the United States in order to allow two industries to hire Black people for free. The Pullman trains were hiring Black men for free. The restaurants were hiring Black women for free. As you may know, the Pullman car porters organized the first Black union and won the right to one fair wage, a full minimum wage with tips on top, in 1937. And a year later, the National Restaurant Association, which was formed in response to the Pullman car porters organizing, said, we'll make sure our workers never got what the Pullman car porters got. In 1938, they managed to get restaurant workers exempted from the first federal minimum wage that passed in 1938. So we started with a $0 wage for tipped restaurant workers in 1938. And we've gone from $0 all the way up to $2.13 an hour at the federal level. And I believe it's just over $3 in Wisconsin. And so Wisconsin is now one of 43 states that persists with this legacy of slavery for a workforce that's still overwhelmingly women of color, mostly single moms working in very casual restaurants. Most of these workers don't work in fine dining. They work in IHOPs and Denny's and Applebee's, and they struggle with three times the poverty rate of other workers. They use food stamps at double the rate. And with the pandemic, they started reaching there. You said there's a tipping point. Well, there's a tipping point for consumers.
But yes.
There's also been a tipping point for workers where they've said enough is enough. And they've started walking off the job in the millions across the country. And that has led to a lot of employers having to raise wages and other industries trying to emulate the restaurant industry by also introducing tipping so that they too can pay the sub-minimum wage. So until we end this legacy of slavery, you're just going to see tipping spread because every employer will want the boondoggle that the restaurant industry has had for 150 years.
I'm writing down buzzwords, Saru, like boondoggle. It is a legacy of slavery. And to that point, exactly, Saru, when I think about the different restaurants and places that I've been where tipping is expected, what I often find is that men, especially white men, have the most coveted service industry positions. So if you go into any 4 or 5 star hotel or restaurant, I guarantee you that there will be a majority, if not most to all of these servers or folks that are going to get tips at those really high-end places.
That's right.
Are mostly men and nearly entirely white men.
That's right.
Again, being left to women and women of color to do the jobs where they are much more economically at risk and therefore vulnerable to all sorts of terrible behavior like harassment.
That's
and
right.
Frankly, sexual assault. We know that this is not the best way to do things. And yet I've heard for many years from people that operate service industry businesses, restaurants and bars. I got a ton of friends that work across the service industry panorama, including in hotels, hotel workers. I've heard for a long time, like, we can't afford to pay a base rate or a minimum wage, which, again, ain't even minimum wage if we're talking about the federal minimum levels.
That's right. That's right.
You've studied this, Saru. What's your response when you hear people saying, I can't pay people a livable wage?
Yeah, so there are 7 states that already require a full minimum wage with tips on top. They're not that far from Wisconsin. California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska all require a full minimum wage with tips on top. And we just won the state of Michigan. We also just won the city of Chicago. Illinois is not that far. You know, we think we might pass Illinois this year. So this is moving across the country. But in the 7 states that have done this forever, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska, actually restaurant sales are higher than they are in Wisconsin. Small businesses, restaurants are growing faster than they are in Wisconsin. Overall industry job growth rates are higher. And tipping averages are higher, by the way, because guess who are the best tippers, Maggie? I bet you know who are the best tippers in the United States of America.
Women.
It is women, yes. But specifically, it's restaurant workers.
Of course, and other industry folks, yes.
Because they know what it's like to live on tips. And so when they get paid more, they tip better and tipping goes up. As you said, sexual harassment goes way down. So we already know what happens when you pass this law. And why is it that restaurants do better? Well, don't take it from me. The CFO of Denny's actually admitted on a shareholder call in 2021 that Denny's California, he said, grows faster than any other Denny's anywhere in the country. Why? Because when we pay our people a full minimum wage, guess what they do? They bring their families to eat at Denny's and the guest receipts are higher and the business does better. So everybody does better when workers are paid enough. And we know it's possible. You don't even have to go to another state. In Wisconsin, after the pandemic, so many workers left the industry. We've tracked over 100 restaurants in Wisconsin that switched to paying a full minimum wage with tips on top because they couldn't afford to find people. People couldn't afford to work for $3. So they had to raise wages in order to recruit and retain staff.
Yeah, so critical. My guest for this installment of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money is Saru Jayaraman. She is, again, the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage. She's also authored Behind the Kitchen Door, a national bestseller, as well as Forked, a new standard for American dining. And most recently, One Fair Wage, ending subminimum pay in America. She was listed in CNN's top 10 visionary women, which is freaking awesome. And you are also acknowledged by the James Beard Foundation, which I took special note of. James Beard, for those who aren't foodie wonks, is considered sort of the gold standard in American restaurateurship, gives out annual awards. And for the James Beard Foundation to acknowledge this tipping problem, I thought was really, really key. When you talk to restaurant owners, especially those, now we have celebrity chefs, are they coming to this movement as well? Do they understand that tipping doesn't work?
A lot of them do. And as I said, since the pandemic, we've tracked, I think at this point, we've tracked close to 6,000 restaurants across the country, including lots of celebrity chefs, but also small mom and pop restaurants around the country who are saying, look, we just honestly can't afford, it's not working anymore. It's not sustainable. We can't find people willing to work for these wages. And frankly, you know this, Maggie, in much of the country, including Wisconsin, workers are having a hard time finding to be able to live anywhere near where the restaurants are, you know, like,
yes,
rent is so high. Gas is so high. Like, for if you think about a $3 wage and the cost of a gallon of gas, you're not going to pay more to get to work than you get when you get there. And when there's a slow day or there's a blizzard or a, you know, a very hot day, that's all you get. You don't get the tips. And so yeah. I think there's a reckoning happening, both because, look, post-pandemic, so many workers said enough is enough. 1.2 million workers walked off the job. Thousands of restaurants had to raise wages. And yes, we've had a lot of new supportive restaurant owners join forces with us. But also, as you started the show, there's a tipping point where there's general tip fatigue. Tips have gone down. It's now undeniable that tips have gone down since the start of the pandemic to now. And that has resulted in a lot of workers saying, I honestly don't make enough in tips to make this job worth it anymore. And so all of that combined means there is no future for this industry unless we pay people a full livable wage with tips on top.
My special guest, Saru Jayaraman. We're going to have more when we come back after these brief messages. We got to take care of some business, including, why are we talking about not taxing tips? Is that actually the solution? I have my doubts. Saru weighs in after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, folks. We'll be right back with more Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money.
Listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
News from the center, WRCE.
Billboard, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
If you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop for life. Glitter in the sky, glitter in my eyes, shining just the way you like. If you're feeling like you need a little
welcome
bit
back, Wisconsin. And welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, folks. We've got two more sets of Brewers tickets for tomorrow's St. Louis game to give away before the end of the show. Don't go anywhere. That might keep you around, but this is the information that absolutely should keep you around. My special guest is Saru Jayaraman. She is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage, a national organization working for a full and fair minimum wage for every person who works in America. Before the break, Saru, we mentioned, and again, you're on mute, just to be clear, we mentioned that both Vice President Harris and President Trump have proposed eliminating income taxes on tips. Certainly, as a foundational point, lowering taxes on people that have to work for a living and get paychecks, especially those that are most economically vulnerable. We should be looking at every available policy to reduce income taxes on folks like that. But this seems to me to be a bit of a distraction, like a look over here while we're not really solving the fundamental problem. Are eliminating taxes on tips a good idea?
So, first of all, I do want to say that restaurant workers are thrilled. We have 300,000 in our membership and we represent 14 million nationally. And look, this is the first time tipped workers, restaurant workers have been discussed at all in a presidential campaign. And so it is heartening to finally see the needs of these workers uplifted in poll after poll. These workers, young people, Black voters, Latinx voters has named cost of living and jobs with living wages as the absolute top most important issue for this year's election. So it's heartening that it seems like both candidate campaigns are getting that. It's unfortunate that, like you said, it's this solution because our research shows that 2/3 of tipped restaurant workers do not earn enough income to pay federal income tax. And so 2/3 of workers wouldn't even benefit from this proposal. What's clearly really needed is a raise. What's clearly really needed is for employers to be required to pay workers a full fair minimum wage with tips on top. It is only fair. Look, every other industry, every other employer has to pay the minimum wage. Yeah. Why does this one industry get to be left out? And why would this one industry get a tax break compared to every other worker? Every worker deserves a full fair minimum wage with tips on top. Now, for tips that are on top of a full minimum wage, sure, let's not tax them. But let's get everybody first and foremost to get paid by their employer a living wage that allows them to count on that wage, know that it's coming regardless of, as you said, hurricanes, blizzards, hot days, or having to show a little skin to the customer that comes in and demands it. I mean, during the pandemic, we heard from thousands of women, yeah, I'm regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. And that was the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, tip of the iceberg, pun intended. I mean, I have worked in service. I didn't work in service for very long. And even back then, I worked at a lunch and breakfast joint, which is a slog to say the very least. And I was young, I was 16. I got comments all the time and they weren't from creepy guy. It was older gentlemen thinking they were being friendly, but I was constantly being assessed. I've heard horror stories from my friend. I had a number of friends when I lived in New York that did bottle service. I can't even tell those stories on the radio. This is such a fundamental issue. And the idea that this impacts women and women of color so acutely, I think needs to be emphasized. And I feel like the discussion of eliminating tax on tips isn't just a distraction. It's literally picking people's pocket.
That's right.
Right? Like, look over here at this bright, shiny thing while I rob you blind. Exactly. Because the problem is the underlying wage. There are 14 million restaurant workers in the U.S. We know that approximately 1.2 million people have left the industry. I hope that we have reached the tipping point.
I really hope so, too, because can I tell you something else that's problematic with the no tax on tips? During the pandemic, two-thirds of tipped workers, including in Wisconsin, told us they couldn't get unemployment insurance because in states like Wisconsin, they were told their wages were too low to qualify for benefits. So the less taxable tips are, the less workers are going to be eligible for things like unemployment insurance and Social Security and lots of things later in life, which will affect them. And so what we need is for people to be paid an actual legitimate wage by their employer that the government will recognize when awarding benefits. And I do just want to say, Maggie, your experience is the common experience. Most people don't work in the fine dining restaurant downtown. Yeah. They work in the corner breakfast place, or like I said, the IHOP or the Denny's or the mom and pop Mexican restaurant. That's where most people work. And they struggle with the absolute highest rates of sexual harassment. And you're right, it's women and women of color. And can I add young women?
So yes.
One in two Americans and one in two women, this is the first job that they encounter. It's the first time they're exposed to the world of work, and they are asked to do all kinds of crazy things. So I've interviewed women later in life who say, you know what? I've been sexually harassed later in my career, but I did nothing about it because it was never as bad as it was when I was a young woman working in restaurants, which means this industry sets the standard for what women and men consider acceptable in the workplace. And that's unacceptable.
It truly is. Frankly, Saru, I don't even need to be here. I just need to ask you a question because you know so much about this. And I'm so appreciative of your passion and clarity about, frankly, the moral rights and wrongs here. It has always been anathema to me from the first day that I ever worked that job that this was the job that I would make less than the minimum wage. I went home many days when things were slow with barely $3 per hour. It was excruciating and damnedly hard work as well. To me, the thing that really bothers me most about all of this is I see this as a shifting towards, frankly, trying to get more and more American workers off payroll, calling them contractors or gig workers so that we can eliminate all of these sorts of benefits that we're talking about. Is this part of a pattern, Saru?
It's intentional, Maggie. What, during the whole healthcare reform debate under President Obama, restaurants tried to claim tipped workers as independent contractors, saying they work for customers, not for us, in order to not have to cover them in the exchanges that were set up during Obamacare or healthcare reform. So they already think this way. They want to say, we shouldn't have to pay more than $2 or $3 because you, the customer, pay them. They work for you, which is absurd and ridiculous because let's be real, who profits from the value of those workers' labor? It's not the customers. It's the employers who end up getting these workers to sell their products, their food, their service, and who ends up making the money at the end. It's the employers. It's especially the big chain restaurants that are raking.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jaru. This Saru, this conversation will continue. My special guest, Saru Jayaraman, she is the president and co-founder of One Fair Wage. We could talk about this for a long time. I really appreciate your efforts. Folks, we're going to put where you can find more information in the show's blurb for today. You can find that at civicmedia.us. Again, you can check out Saru's work at One Fair Wage. You can read about their organization. It's time for a full and fair minimum wage for all. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got another special guest coming up. It's Kristen Alfheim. She's running for State Senate District 18. You're not going to want to miss it. Giving away Brewers tickets next. Here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got you.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Imagine being able to detect pests on your crops simply by listening to them eat. This groundbreaking concept has become a reality with the introduction of the Insect Eavesdropper, a tool designed to transform pest management in agriculture. And UW entomology professor Emily Bick is the co-founder, and she says that by harnessing the power of sound, this sensor offers farmers a new way to detect and monitor insect pests directly on their crops.
Now, to figure out if you have corn rootworm in your field, you have to dig the plant, right? Especially the larval stage, which is doing the vast majority of the damage. You dig the plant, you either put it in a bucket, you put it in a malaise trap, you wait till the larva kind of hatches out, dries out, and then you can start to count it, and you can actually tell what that damage is. But this type of sensor allows for that direct detection. So without having to bring your machete or butcher's knife to a cornfield to split a stalk of corn or try to open a cob of corn to see if you have a corn earworm, you could just simply listen.
That's UW entomology professor Emily Bick along with us. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
All right, team, pay attention to this game film about Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans. See here? When dairy farms grow Plenish soybeans for their cows,
they have lower overall feed costs.
Good eye, Jake.
And they maximize milk fat production.
So they increase the return on their investment.
Well, let that be a lesson to you. For lower feed costs and higher milk fat and dairy cows, what do we plant?
Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans.
Learn more at pioneer.com/happycows.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empower Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 386 and a half. That was up 8.5 cents. And new crop corn closed at 409 and a quarter, up 8.25 cents. Cash beans closed at 9.97, that was up 15 cents. And new crop beans closed at 10.12, and that's up 12 cents. And cash wheat closed at 5.52, up 19 and a quarter cents. And new crop wheat closed at 5.66 and three quarters, up 15 and a quarter cents. In the dairy side of things, September Class 3 milk contract is trading at 22.54 a hundredweight, that's up 13 cents. And October milk is trading at 23.23 a hundredweight, and that is up 36 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 226 with no change. 40-pound block cheese closed at 221 and a half. That was up a half. And the double A butter closed down 1 3/4 and closed at 315 and a quarter. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Tons of sunshine today with warm temperatures climbing to the upper 70s. Tonight, as we stay clear, we fall crisp to lows near 50. And for tomorrow, sunshine holds tight as highs flirt with 80 degrees, all ahead of showers and maybe a storm Thursday and Friday. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 76.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself? Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad. Or the seriously smart podcaster? It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
You know, Greg Bach, I think it is time I need a little time away.
Jane, are you going on vacation?
Yes, I am going on vacation. I feel confident. You're going to do a great job. You got Calvin.
Wait, I'm hosting?
Yes, dear, you're going to be hosting.
I thought you were taking me with you. Okay, I guess I will host the show in your stead. Thank you very much.
I trust you.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us on a Hump Day edition next time. Pat Kreitel of Up North News Radio and Trigby Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, plus your phone calls. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained, and rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. When she walked and slapping
time, Bobby's hand in mine. That's me and Kristen. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Kristen Alfheim. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show and a little Janis Joplin this afternoon.
Why not?
Why not? You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and I am so happy to be joined by the original host of Civic Media's Rational Revolution, Appleton Common Council member, Democratic candidate for the newly drawn, now competitive State Senate District 18, Kristen Alfheim. Thank you so much for making time, Kristen. It's a real pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's good to see you face to face. I've been listening to you for a long time.
Well, thank you so much for that. First, let me take care of a little business that I promised our listeners, which was we've got a pair, actually two pairs of Brewers tickets. One pair up. If you are the first caller to answer this trivia question correctly, you'll get a pair of tickets to tomorrow. That is tomorrow's Brewers St. Louis Cardinals game. First pitch at 6:40 at AmFam Field. Here is your trivia question. You're going to call 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. First caller with the correct answer will win a pair of tickets at the in the beautiful club level. Here's your question. Who was the Brewers' first-round draft pick in 1973? Who was the Brewers' first-round draft pick in 1973? This one's a little tougher, but not impossible. Everybody knows this guy's name. I might even give you a little hint if the phone lines don't line up. I'll drop a little hint. Who was the first... Excuse me, the Brewers' first-round draft pick in 1973. Folks, call 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. But now down to the political business of the half hour, Kristen.
Let's get at it.
Let's get at it. This is now a redrawn Senate district. It is competitive for the first time in a long time. Some would say almost 40 years. First of all, right. What does State Senate District include now? Who's newly in State Senate District 18 so people know if they are the ones that should be paying close, close attention?
Well, I think everybody ought to be paying attention to the 18th. It is a big deal. The new 18th is now starts up in the bulk of Appleton, runs all the way through along Lake Winnebago, through Menasha, Nina, and the bulk of Oshkosh. Beautiful district, extremely important district, not just to those who live in it, but the entire valley. We really are the resource of a lot more people than just the voting members.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And again, I think State Senate District 18 and the effort across the state to make hay while the sun shines, while we've got these redrawn maps, finally fairer, moving in the right direction in so long. Why did you decide to throw your hat in the ring with this newly constituted 18th Senate District?
So I was actually on the ticket in 2022 when Appleton and Nina Menasha were drawn into the 19th. Right. And when I jumped into that race, I didn't jump in because I was mad about anything. I jumped in because I knew my history was in problem solving, in listening, in gathering information, and helping people from differing opinions come together and move forward. That is just who I am as a person. I've worked for over 10 years voluntarily in Madison and D.C., advocating for different issues, some being taxes and retirement, some being Alzheimer's research. Interesting that they tend to be red buses and blue buses, which I think is really nonsense. Who doesn't want a reasonable retirement expectation and tax code, and who doesn't want to cure Alzheimer's? Yeah. If those aren't purple issues, I don't know what is. So I've had success in helping different groups realize that depending on who they're talking to, you figure out what we can find common ground on to move forward. And I've done that successfully for a very long time. So this was just kind of the next phase of it. The more I understood about local government, when I got into municipal government, the more I realized and I thought I was fairly educated on things. No. The general person literally knows nothing about how government really is working. All we have are the talking points that are being, you know, shared loudly, whether it be the radio or on TV. And I think my skill set is to help bring the knowledge forward so people can actually make rational choices and hear the whole story, not just, again, a live point here or somebody's opinion there. Get all the facts, and then we can make good decisions from that point. Now, with 18, the numbers are clearly in our favor. It's a beautiful district. It's really the way the Fox Valley should have been drawn all along. And I think it's even more important to have someone who understands how to bridge conversations. We must, in the Fox Valley, understand that we have great we have four massive school districts. We have four municipalities. We have some of the world recognized global leaders in industry. And we probably have more small businesses than most Senate districts combined in many cases. It will take balance. It will take common sense and rational thinking to be able to make sure our entire ecosystem of the Fox Valley is healthy. People, business, environment, all of it has to work together, and it's not a one-sided conversation.
Couldn't agree with you more, Kristen. And that point was certainly driven home to me during my time serving in local government as well. I realized that indeed, when you think about what local government delivers for its voters and constituents, these aren't red and blue issues. No. They're not talking point issues from the national talking heads. These are really kitchen table issues. Wanted to ask you, given your time on the Common Council in Appleton, what's an insight or something that was surprising to you that you want voters and regular people to understand about why local government, why state Senate seats like the 18th are so important to the quality of life that we all enjoy, and frankly, why it's so less partisan than it's made out to be?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, again, everybody thinks there's so much waste going on. No, there's not. There is not a single person in municipal government that is not doing the job of 2.5 people. The budgets in these municipalities are literally 40% behind where they were 12 years ago. 40%. We are absolutely trying to do more as our communities expand and the expectation of services goes up. We are trying to do more with much less. It relates to the same conversation of the school districts. The school district, there is no waste. We have to try and find $1,500 in a budget is difficult to do. Where people start talking about waste, what they're talking about is, are there services that we are paying for that someone does not feel personally? So it's interesting the dynamics you hear in municipal government about what is wasteful. I don't think putting money towards mental health is wasteful. I don't think putting money towards children and making sure there are healthy activities available to people, I don't think that's wasteful. I think that's investment in our community to make sure we are as strong as we can be moving forward. So again, we always have to look beyond our own backyard. What we are using as a citizen is not necessarily what the entire community is utilizing to stay and to become healthy. We have to have all of these pieces working together.
Well, Vince, I think so much of political discourse has been focused on individual interests. And I think you speak to this a little bit, Kristen, right? When I think about what's really impactful in people's lives is I think not just about individual interest, but I also think about community interest.
Right.
Because it is true that if your entire community is healthier, you will actually be healthier on average over time. Your family will be healthier. This is the high tides raising all ships notion. Right. And it shows up the most in local government because local governments deliver the most critical services.
Yeah.
And I tend to include state government in local government because, again, it has a direct impact on people's lives. What are the two or three major issues, Kristen, that are top of mind for you as a candidate and that you'd like to see the state take greater action on?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on all day. There's certainly a large list. I think that at my core, I'm a believer in getting back to the business of government. The one thing the lines of the new maps have given us is the expectation of accountability of our elected officials.
Yes.
When you have a supermajority drawn, everyone is mad. The Republicans are mad because they can't get through everything that they want. The Democrats are mad because they can't get any ideas to even a committee hearing. It's just no one's happy about anything. And we have to get over that. We have to utilize these maps. By the way, I think Tony Evers is the most patriotic person on the planet by putting these maps in play because he made it a fair fight. It wasn't a sling it from one side to the other type thing. But my biggest issue is conversation. I absolutely, you know, I'm a Democrat. There is no question about it. I'm a people first individual. We must also have a little bit of a fiscal edge to us, though. And I do. You know, I play with money and taxes for a living. I do understand where we are in the world, and we can't always have what we want when we want it. But there was a time not that long ago where red and blue would come together. And we would find out of the 10 points that one side was suggesting that four of those was actually good for the people and the economic other side. It was good fiscally and socially to do it. Yep. That is where I want to drive Madison one more time. And I believe there are people down there ready and willing to do that on both sides. My second issue is kids. Kids, 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 kids. Every problem that we have in society would be better if we dealt with children, the younger, the better. If we make sure that they are fed, we make sure they are healthy, we make sure they are housed, and we make sure they are educated. Everything in the world gets better if we provide those four things. And let's be honest, not every child has that. Again, we look at our own backyards. If we have been, you know, blessed enough in life to be raised by two parents with a comfortable income and a comfortable house and go to a good school, that's awesome. There are so many that aren't. In the Appleton, I know at least two out of the four school districts in the 18th Senate District, 40% of the kids that go to our schools are eligible for free meals. 40%.
Yeah.
We have got to help ensure children have every opportunity to find success in our community. If you want to talk about workforce development, start with kids. Yeah. If you want to attract more talent into your organization, talk about schools. We have to drive that home. Women's issues, I'm just going to say, what the hell? The fact that we still are talking about this is beyond me. I am strong, strong, strong pro-choice all day long. So are the majority of Wisconsinites, and so is the Fox Valley. Let's just move forward from that and put some things in place that make it final. And don't think it's safe, because there were just rules in the last few months that they refused to make it a permanent, and they refused to take steps to make it firm. So we all have to show up for that reason as well. But those are some major issues that I have.
And as the next president of the United States likes to say, they are out of their minds, are they not?
Out of their minds. I have a shirt that says, seriously? I just want to wear that all day long. Seriously?
All day long. I heard, I was interviewing Congressman Dan Kildee during the DNC, and he said a line, Kristen, that I think you will particularly enjoy. I've said it a couple of times on air. I'm going to say it again because I hope our listeners as well start to remember it, because it really points to what is needed in politics, which is reasonable compromise. You talked about there's the 10 things and four of them we probably agree on into the overlap. And here's what the congressman said to me. Politics is the art of disappointing your supporters and those that you agree with at a rate they can absorb.
Yes.
We cannot let perfect be the enemy of the good. She certainly will not. Her name is Kristen Ahlfeim. She is the candidate to beat, if you will, the candidate that I'll be voting for if I lived in the 18th district. She's running for State Senate District 18 up in the Fox Valley. You can find out more about her where, Kristen? What's your campaign website?
You can find me at ahlfeimforwisconsin.org. Yes, you have to spell that all out.
I'll do it for him. That is ahlfeimforwisconsin.org. That's ahlfeimforwisconsin.org. You can find out all about Kristen's candidacy there. Thanks so much for spending some time this afternoon with us.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks.
Best of luck in the 18th, folks. We'll have the last segment of the day coming up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Final thoughts are up next.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Most of us can agree everyone deserves the right to make their own medical decisions. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, we have leaders like Vice President Kamala Harris who are standing up for our rights to make our own medical decisions and protect abortion rights. As Vice President, Kamala Harris helped lead the administration's efforts to protect abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Vice President Harris has worked to defend access to emergency medical care and support the ability to travel for reproductive care. She's fought for access to high-quality, affordable contraception and strengthened reproductive health privacy. Vice President Harris has defended our rights and freedoms against right-wing extremists who want the government to make medical decisions for us. She's a champion for our rights.
Visit www.abwt.org/Kamala and tell Vice President Harris, keep fighting for our freedom to make our own medical decisions. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, Wisconsin, or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You've got comments about what you heard today. It was a busy show. We've had guests back to back. We want to hear from you during the last segment. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. One of my favorite callers, Karina from Milwaukee. What do you have to say? Lots going on this afternoon.
Come on.
Go ahead, well, Karina.
Hi. You know what? I have a very primitive understanding, and I want to ask you a question. So I'm thinking this way. I make money, right? I pay taxes. Then I go to the restaurant. I eat. I pay taxes on the sales and stuff like that. And if I'm willing to give a tips to those people, I don't understand why they need to pay taxes. Can you explain that? I mean, it's my willing to give it to them, right?
Yeah, so I don't think, I believe Karina's specific question is, so I've been taxed on the money that I have in my pocket, and so I'm giving it to someone who works in a restaurant. Why do they get taxed again? Well, in general, that's how our spending works, right? Like, we get taxed on the money that ends up in our pocketbook, and we, again, pay taxes when we go buy stuff in the form of sales taxes. In general, there are a number of taxes in this country that are triggered by transactions. In a restaurant, of course, there's a transaction where you're purchasing food. But the real question I think Karina is getting at is, why isn't it a good idea to not tax tips? And I don't think I'm making an argument that there should be taxes on tips. I'm making an argument that removing an income tax on tips isn't solving the problem at all. The fundamental problem isn't taxing tips. The fundamental problem is we do not pay workers in the service business, in restaurants, a fair minimum wage. We don't pay many people a fair minimum wage. And by a fair minimum wage, I mean a wage that actually allows someone to live on it if they are willing to work 40 or 50 hours worth of good hard work in a week. I have asked people this question numerous times myself, conservative folks. Said, we do know what minimum wage is. It's not like some magic number. You can figure out for a single person living in a metropolitan statistical area, we know the average medical costs, how much food costs, how much housing costs average. We know all those things. We can work backwards. You assume a 40 or 50 hour work week, whatever you'd like, and we work backwards. That, my friends, should be your minimum wage. So the problem isn't necessarily that you're being taxed on tips. More on that in just one second. The problem is that the underlying wage is so deeply inadequate that tips are necessary in the first place. That's thing one. Thing two for Karina and others is this. I make this point, we make this point almost every day during that 3 o'clock hour Maggie and the Millionaire segment. We tax work unfairly in this country. People that work for a living, who have to work for a living, should be taxed less than or at most equal to wealth that is generated by doing nothing. When I say tax wealth like work, I mean that a dollar that is earned when someone sits on their butt and their investment becomes more valuable, that dollar's worth of investment value increase should be taxed just like a dollar earned from blood, sweat, and tears that people who actually work for a living earn. I think it is an unconscionable and immoral wrong that we do not tax wealth like work. So it is both of those answers, right? We don't pay people that work in restaurants and in service enough, and that is a moral wrong. And secondly, we tax people that work for a living in the wrong way, and we do not tax billionaires and corporations nearly enough. Mark from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon, sir?
Yeah, thank you. And I'm wondering about the whole not taxing the tips and being well aware that a woman I dated back in the 80s, she was actually being taxed on money because the employer was actually imputing what her tips would have been,
right,
and taxing her based on that, and that was completely
that
unfair.
Trick.
And it was brought, and I was brought up before that you know, how are these people getting the money, you know, for Social Security, because the employer should be kicking in then toward their Social Security more, because the tips are being used to make up for the money they're not making. Perhaps the true solution is to bring up the minimum wage up to a living wage. The tips are no longer required like they have over in Europe. You give a tip for exceptional service rather than to help make up for the employer's lack of not paying the men and women that work in this profession. And I'm a big tipper because I remember for my girlfriend at the time back in the 80s, I mean, she was working, and back when they first dated back in the late 70s, she was working two restaurant jobs. She was working at Bridgman's and Twin Ports Truck Center and, you know, working her butt off, you know, to pay for college. And it wasn't making.
It's damn hard work. From fine dining to diners, being a server, a busboy, working as a line chef, a sous chef, chef de cuisine, bartenders, it's hard work. You deal with ornery people. You deal with disrespect. And if we require people to earn, quote unquote, tips,
yeah,
we set women especially up for terrible harassment on the job.
For sure. And Maggie, as putting in two decades of service time in, I can tell you I can back up pretty much all of that. But the other thing I want to add on is that if you go to a wedding or somebody's event, you're giving up your entire week's worth of work because it's on the weekend, and that's when you actually make money. So
yep,
on top of everything else, you're socially screwed.
Yep, you give up your social life. A texter from the 414 texting in this, minimum wage jobs like McDonald's are not supposed to be livable wage jobs. They're supposed to be for high school kids. Yeah, well, maybe tell all the people that work at McDonald's during the school day that. Tell the working moms that pick up shifts at McDonald's that.
Tell my neighbors that work at McDonald's that I see every morning.
Like, if they're supposed to be for high school kids, since when exactly? I don't buy that for one second. Jeff from Wind Lake, I'm sorry we ran out of time this afternoon. Can't get to you, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm going to be back tomorrow. But just letting you know, on Thursday and Friday, I have to travel for work. So you're going to have some special guest hosts, Matt Rothschild and Jim Santel. But as I end every show, I'll say it yet again this afternoon. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it's better when we stand together. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, how about a little something, you know, for the effort?
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us on a hump day edition next time. Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trigby Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, plus your phone calls. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Earl Ingram.
Mayor Brian Kennedy of Glendale.
I've heard Republicans say this is a coup. Nobody voted for Kamala Harris. Yeah, when I voted for Joe Biden in the primaries, I was voting for Kamala Harris to be his vice presidential running mate. In this case, Joe Biden stepped aside. We nominated Kamala Harris.
I think it's a little bit like the Dodgers complaining that the Braves starting pitcher who injured his shoulder yesterday isn't starting today.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.